Yesterday we discussed over Lasiyoson in Mikra Megillah, and I'd like to give a quick overview, a review of what we did. The sugya is in Megillah Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, and on the Mishnah that says that the bracha of Megillah is dependent upon Minug, the Gemara quotes Abaye, and Abaye says that that bracha that the Mishnah refers to, which depends upon Minig, is only the bracha l'achreha, not the bracha l'faneha. And as far as l'faneha, mitzvah l'varech. There's no question, says Abaye, you have to make a bracha, it's not dependent upon Minig. Now, our focus here is on the proof that Abaye brings. Why does he need a proof, and what is the proof? And he quotes Rabbi Yehuda v'Shmuel, kol mitzvah kulam avarech aleim over l'asiyosan. So first of all, why does he need a proof for this? I mean, we have sugyas all over the place that a mitzvah derabbanan, like Mikra Megillah in this case, or Ner Chanukah in the Gemara and Shabbos Chaf Gimel, requires a bracha. And it seems that he only quotes Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel to prove that there's a din of over lasiyasan, not to prove that there's a bracha on a mitzvah derabbanan. That fundamental premise is clear, and that doesn't have anything to do with Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. So it seems like there's a havamina here before Abaye that even if a mitzvah derabbanan requires a bracha, it would not require over lasiyosan. And why is that? After all, a birchas mitzvah is over lasiyosan. Why should it be different than a mitzvah derabbanan? Now we mentioned the Turi Evan in our discussion. The Turi Evan quotes a Mishnah in Sukkah regarding Hallel that also makes the bracha depend upon Minhag. And Abaye there says that Sviru Lekemandi Omer Perk Dalid Mitzvah Lulav Kol Shiva LeBracha, that Abaye holds that we're talking about the Mandi Omer who holds that you need a bracha on a mitzvah derabbanan against Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Shimon ben Levi only has a bracha on mitzvah luluv on the first day because it's midoraisa, and mikan v'yelich mitzvah zekenim, and you don't need a bracha. So therefore, hal and megillah would not require a bracha lefneihem according to Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. Abaye, on the other hand, disagrees, and he holds like the rest of the amoraim that a mitzvah derabbanan does require a bracha. So the Turi Evan suggests and rejects the possibility that maybe even Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi v'Seyaso would agree that Hallel and Megillah require bracha, and they are on a higher level than other mitzvahs d'Rabbanan because Megillah is midivrei Kabbalah, and not only that, Hallel is a takanas neviim according to the Gemara at the end of Psachim. So therefore, these mitzvahs, Megillah and Hallel, are upgraded to a status close to Doraisa that even Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would agree that here there would be a bracha. And he says the following, that you could have said that that's the Chiddush of Abaye here, to tell you that Megillah requires a bracha, even according to those who would say, who would argue that a mitzvah d'Rabbanan doesn't get a bracha. But once again, we're going to face the same problem because Abaye brings a proof from Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, from the din of over lasiyosan. It doesn't seem that he's coming to establish that there is a bracha on Mikra Megillah. He's not adducing a proof to that conclusion. But rather, he holds that in general, a mitzvah d'Rabbanan requires a bracha, and there's no... Abaye never accepted Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi to question whether a mitzvah d'Rabbanan requires a bracha. So when Abaye quotes the raya that there's a din of oral asiyos in the mitzvahs from Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel, we're still a little bit in the dark as to what exactly he's trying to prove. If he's of the opinion, and that's what we see from Abaye in Sukkah, that a mitzvah d'Rabbanan does require a bracha, for example, you make a bracha on lulav called Shiva, then Abaye rejects Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that a d'Rabbanan doesn't require a bracha. And what does he gain by quoting Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel? I mean, if Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel is telling us that even a mitzvah d'rabbanan requires a bracha, which doesn't seem to be implicit in his words, he's talking about the din of overlas yosan. But nevertheless, that would not be a proof against those who would reject a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So again, if Abai wanted to establish that there's a bracha here, he should have quoted the statement of Rav that on a mitzvah d'rabbanan we do make a bracha, which is the statement of Rav in Sukkah. Now, at this point, we raise the fundamental chakira with regard to Birchas HaMitzvos. Is the bracha on the Maisa Mitzvah or on the Kiyum HaMitzvah? And we medayik from the Lashon HaRambam at the end of Hilchos Brachos that the bracha is established on the Asiyah. And the Rambam says that kol mitzvah shasiyosa hi gmar chiyuv v'gvar p'shas asiyah. The Rambam consistently emphasizes that the bracha is on the asiyah. Now, Abaye might be quoting the halacha of Shmuel, namely over lasiyosa in birchas mitzvah, because Abaye is not coming to teach us that you make a bracha on a mitzvah d'rabbanan, but rather that the mitzvah d'rabbanan is not an exception to the general rule that the bracha is established on the maisa mitzvah. Because one could have argued that there's no din of over lasiyosan in birchas hamitzvah on a d'rabbanan, because here the emphasis is not on the status of the maisa, but rather on the key. The maisa is only a means to an end to fulfill the mitzvah of asisa k'chol asher yerucha. And that's what Abai wants to suggest, that from the fact that Shmuel says kol mitzvah v'varach leim over lasiyosan, and Shmuel himself holds like Rav in Sukkah Mem Vav that there is a bracha on a mitzvah rabbanon, he should have excluded the din of he should have excluded mitzvah rabbanon from this general rule of kol mitzvah k'chol v'varach leim over lasiyosan. The fact that he didn't implies that even on a mitzvah d'rabbanan, the halacha of over lasiyosan applies, which means that the asiyah itself in a mitzvah d'rabbanan is upgraded to the status of a maisa mitzvah and generates a brach. The brach is chal on the maisa mitzvah. Again, it would seem that in the case of kriyas hamegillah, insofar as that's a mitzvah midivrei kabbalah, it would be pshita that it has a maisa mitzvah. It's like a doraisa. It's midirei kabbalah. It's ruach hakodesh. And one could have argued that Abai didn't need a proof for over lasiyosan in the case of mikra megillah, because that was pshita. Mikra megillah is not a classic derabbanan. Now, what we were suggesting here, we've discussed this in the past, based on a chiddush in the Gvuras Yitzchak in the name of Beryl Soloveitchik, that with regard to the status of Megillah, the Mikra Megillah, vis-a-vis this classification as a mitzvah d'ri sofer, as a mitzvah d'ri kabbalah, it doesn't mean that you can circumvent Beis Din. I mean, the whole sugya at the beginning of Masechta the Megillah about how they establish Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, seemingly undermining the Takon of Beis Din of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, they weren't Godel B'Menachah Pominion. That whole sugya seems to be predicated on a single premise, and that is that the Takon of Mikra Megillah is a Takon of Beis Din. And now we go into the different dinim that apply for a later Beis Din vis-a-vis for an earlier Beis Din, etc. So what it means is that although Mikra Megillah is jacked up to the status of a mitzvah d'rabbanan kabbalah, nevertheless, you cannot be koveya halacha based on d'rabbanan kabbalah, meaning based on nevuah, because of the principle ein navi rasha l'chadish dover me'ata. It's just that through the takon of Beis Din, they can be koveya megillah l'doros. So when we say that Mikra Megillah is al pi Navi, it means that it was Nemra b'Nevuah, And the nevuah was that Beis Din should make this takana of Mikra Megillah as the takana is Beis Din. And therefore you need, you know, you cannot have a later Beis Din except on the very extenuating exceptional circumstances be okay the original takana is Beis Din. In other words, let's understand that at the end of the day, Mikra Megillah, although it is written in Kisra HaKodesh and it's upgraded to the status of the Rei Torah, but nevertheless it is a Takonis Beis Din. And if it's Takonis Beis Din, then the Maisa Mitzvah is a means to an end, i.e. to fulfill the mandate of Beis Din. And in that being the case, we don't know that the Asiya is elevated to the status of an Asiya and the Bracha is on the Asiya. And therefore, well, let's mention the Turi Evan again, who says that even though the Kriya of Yom is Midirei Kabbalah, the Kriya of Laila is only the Rabbanan. And if that be the case, then with regard to the Kriya of Yom, it could be that it's Pshita, that you'd be Mavarach over Lasiyasa, because then Divrei Kabbalah upgrades the status of the Asiya in this mitzvah to an Asiya which generates a bracha, so it's over Lasiyasa. But in the case of Kriya of Laila, Abai needs a Kiddush that even though it's not Midirei Kabbalah, it's a classic to Rabbanon, nevertheless the bracha is on the Maisa mitzvah and not on the Kiyuma mitzvah, and therefore it becomes an over-lasiyosin situation. Let's just again review a few premises of this presentation. Number one, that you could be medayik from the Rambam that a bracha is on a Maisa mitzvah, not on the Kiyum HaMitzvah. And this is also based on the fact that Rambam says that a Osa mitzvah lo birech, and he has a whole story about a mitzvah shadayin asiyasa kayemis, like tzitzis and tefillin and so forth, that you can still make a bracha because you still can maintain a bracha on the Maisa mitzvah insofar as the Maisa mitzvah is a continuous Maisa mitzvah. We also mentioned yesterday in Shir that Rabbi Kivegan at Tshuva seems to assume that you could have a bracha on a kiyuma mitzvah. He talks about someone who enters into an apartment or a house to rent it, and there's already a mezuzah up there, that maybe he could possibly make the bracha on the mezuzah, which means on the kiyuma mitzvah. He quotes a chidah that the bracha is on the kviyas hamezuzah, not on the kiyuma mitzvah. And finally, that takonis brachos tarte isnuhu, there's a takonis bracha on the maisa mitzvah without a kiyuma mitzvah, and there may be a takonis bracha mitzad the kiyuma mitzvah without the maisa mitzvah. And then afkamina is over lasiyasa, that if the bracha is on the kiyuma mitzvah, then there's no din of overly asiyosan. And that's what Abai wants to emphasize, that a mitzvah drabbanon has the chashivus of a maisa mitzvah, the mimavarech, and therefore the din and the rule of overly asiyosan kicks in and applies. And that's what he wants to quote from Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel. So we're on Daf Yudalit on Beis, and we've been studying the Nevios, the various Nevios that prophesied in Israel. And the last one that we studied was Abigail, who was married to a fellow named Novel, but ultimately she did marry David HaMelech. And when she spoke to David HaMelech, she expressed a prophecy, because she said to him, Lo tia zos lecho lefuga. And Chazal understand that the word fuga means a michshol, because David HaMelech seems to have made some advances and approached her. She was a married woman. But from the fact that she uses the word zos, it implies, and this is what Chazal see here, Al-Pi Torah Shebal Peh, that there was another michshol in David's life. And the word zos means don't add this one to the other one. That's called zos michal to ika achrita. And the other michal in David's life was the mice of Bathsheba. My ninu, the mice of the Bathsheba. And basically what she was saying to David, that's what I have here in a footnote in the name of the Ben Yehoyada, Avigal was hinting at David that when the Gemara tells us on Daf Dalet Amud Beis in Masechta Avodah Zarah, Lo David Roy Li Oso Maisa De Bat Sheva, that David shouldn't have been really guilty of that action, El Lahoros Tshuva, so that there was some sort of divine intervention here that David HaMelech would have that relationship with Bathsheba in order to teach us the way of tshuva. David becomes the paradigm of tshuva, teaching us tshuva. But now she's telling him, Avigail, that if he would have a relationship with her now, and that would be a tremendous mikshal, we would never be able to say that David HaMelech is lo royally also maisa, because you see that he's doing it consistently. So she warned him. Now, how did she know that there would be this Maisa of Bathsheba? I mean, after all, that was going to happen later in history. At this point in time, David HaMelech was not involved with Bathsheba at all. So it must be that she was in a via, that she had a prophecy. So this is another proof amongst the various Nevi'os that we have, the seven Nevi'os, that Avigail is definitely on the list of Nevi'os. Now, once the Gemara tells us from the word Vizos that she had a Nevuah about the Bathsheba episode, then the Gemara goes on to darshan another Nevuah of hers, because when she takes leave from David HaMelech, Abigail says, V'hoysa nefesh Adoni tzrura b'tzora chayim eis Hashem Elokecha. And basically she bestows upon David HaMelech a bracha, that his nefesh should always be kshura b'tzorah chayim. It should always be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When she wanted to hint to him that even if he'll be guilty of the sin with Bathsheba, nevertheless HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be mochel him. And despite his chet, the nefesh of David HaMelech would continue to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It will never be detached from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's always nafshal tzura b'tzura chayim. Now it's interesting that when a person dies, they usually quote this pasuk, b'hoysa nefesh tzura b'tzura chayim. They don't realize that that pasuk was originally formulated by Avigail. That doesn't bother me. But what they don't realize is that this was Avigail's blessing to David HaMelech. And it really indicates that despite sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu be mochel. So it could be that that's the blessing that we say on behalf of the Niftar, that even though this person is no longer alive, and during their lifetime they were no doubt guilty of some misgivings and some failures and shortcomings, despite those chatoim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be mochel them, and they'll continue to have a connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, who's called the Tzrar HaChayim. He's the source of life. The last thing that Abigail says to David when she takes leave, Amrele, she says to Vehetiv Hashem La Adoni Vezacharta Es Amosecha, as if to foresee that down the line Naval will die, maybe he'll be killed by David, and she asks David, Adoni, my master, please remember your servant, meaning remember me for something good, even though I was married to Naval and so forth. And basically, we'll see that Chazal interpret this, that she was hoping that at some point in her life she would be able to be married to David HaMelech. It's a little bit strange that she's married now to Naval and she's thinking about the possibility down the line of being married to David. That's a little bit of a question. But Omer Rav Nachman, the Gemara now quotes various idiomatic phrases to reflect on what she was doing and what she was saying, Abigail. Haini diamri inshi, this is like the idiomatic phrase that's quite popular. Issa sabahadi shusa pilcha. A woman, even when she's schmoozing with you, she's talking, she's carrying on a conversation, she still continues weaving. I guess it means that women multitask, as we say. You know, many women can do many things at the same time. And why is the Gemara, why is Rav Nachman quoting this idiomatic phrase with regard to Avigail? Because she's asking with regard to her husband, Naval, that he shouldn't be killed, but at the same time she's asking that David HaMelech should not put her husband to death. She's requesting from David that if he if he does put Nabal to death at the end of the day, that he, David, would marry her, would marry Abigail. So she's doing two things at once, you know, like she's talking and yet she's able to weave something. So she's talking about saving her husband, and at the same time she's weaving in the possibility that she would marry David HaMelech. Ikadiyamri, another idiomatic phrase that might be appropriate for Abigail's behavior, is Shafil Viazil Bar Avza. An Avza is a duck, and a duck walks in a certain bent over fashion, which is typical of shiflus, Mekufaf Vishafel, a certain kind of humility. So you might think that since the duck is bending down in a posture of humility, that the duck doesn't see anywhere beyond in the horizon in the distance. But no, Einohi mitaisfe. Its eyes, however, mitaisfe. Mitaisfe in Hebrew means sofim lemerchak. Mitaisfe means they see something in the distance. So I don't know enough about ducks to tell you this. We'd have to research this, but it seems like the Gemara has this idiomatic phrase that talks about the duck or the goose. And what's the nimshal here? The point is that Abigail is ready on the, at the same time that she's asking to save her husband, that David should not put him to death for being Mori ben Malchus. Nevertheless, she has a cook. She has a look that's far down the future, and she sees that later on, she would want after the death of her husband, she would want to be married to David HaMelech. So far we've had the following: we had Sarah, we had Dvorah, we had Chanah, and we had Abigail. Those are the four that we've had so far. Now the Gemara goes on to Chulda, to prove that Chulda was a Nevi'ah. So again, Miriam. So we have Sarah, Miriam, Dvorah, Chanah, Abigail. Now we have Chulda, then we'll have Esther. I don't usually make a bracha on hot water, but this time I'm thirsty. Yeah, sometimes it's good for my stomach also if I have hot water. Oh, yeah, I see it. Good. So how do we know that Chulda is a Nevi'ah? That's number 6 on the list. And the Gemara quotes a Pasuk in Malachim. And the Pasuk says the following: Vayelech Chilkiyahu HaKohen V'Achikam V'Achbar V'Shafan V'Asoya El Chulda HaNevi'ah. So the Pasuk explicitly calls her a Nevi'ah. Now who is this whole entourage made up of? The 5 different people, very strange names, some of them, but that's a different issue. These were shluchim of Yeshayahu HaMelech, and they were asking Chulda's advice on a certain issue that had to do with a Sefer Torah that they found. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi was alive at that time. In fact, the Gemara is going to say later on that she, Chulda, was related to Yirmiyahu. But be that as it may, the Torah, the Tanakh says explicitly that Chulda was a Nevi'ah. You can't get more explicit than that. And that's why the king Yeshayahu sent this whole mishlachat over to Chulda to try to, Gemara is going to say later on, even to try to pray on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara is upset about this because b'makom dekai Yirmiyah, heichi misnabei ihi. So I think what the Gemara is asking, we have a principle that a Talmud is not supposed to pasken a shaila b'makom rabo. It's sort of like insulting to his Rebbe if he takes over the power of Hora when his Rebbe is, possibly even if his Rebbe is alive, even if he's not there. So how could she get involved in Nevuah when Yirmiyah is around? He's the master of Nevuah. Doesn't this in a sense undermine the status, the covet of Yirmiyah? Heichi misnabe ihi? How could she be misnabe? So the Mefarshim here go to town. They don't understand the Gemara's kasha. Nevuah is something passive, meaning a Navi receives Nevuah. And the Nevuah is the transmission to Klal Yisrael. That's what the mandate of Nevuah is all about. So what does this have to do with Yirmiyah? Okay, Yirmiyah got his Nevuah, but she, Chulda, got her Nevuah. and if the people came to seek her out, and she in fact received a nevuah, then she has to, that's her obligation, she has to respond. So why is Gemara ki'ilu casting aspersions and critiquing Chulda for giving her nevuah? She was totally passive. So the Ben Yoyada says the following. I'm sorry, this is the Merome Sada. The Merome Sada says the following. Even though nevuah comes from Shamayim, there's no way that that a Navi would receive the nevuah unless the Navi is active. What is the activity of a Navi? This is called his bodidus. Sounds like Bretzel of Chassidus, you know, you go out into the fields. Ulahalos olav ruach Hashem. The Navi has to be active to bring upon himself the ruach. Right? Nevuah is called a ruach. And then he or she could be misnavi. So the Gemara is asking, if Yirmiyahu was available, he was alive and well, why was she chulda preparing herself for nevuah? That would seem to be an insult to Yirmiyahu. As if to say, God, I'm preparing myself because it's not enough that you have Yirmiyahu, you need me too. Amri Bei Rav Mishmei Derav. So the Gemara answers, chulda krovas Yirmiyahu hoisa. This is not a halacha nevuah. This is not a halacha, an absolute din that a Navi is not allowed to prepare themselves if there's a greater Navi around. No, there is no such thing. Everybody is responsible to maximize their potential to be a Navi. It's all a question.
And marry them all at the same time.
And it's all a question of insult. It's a din of kavod here, that for a person to prepare themselves to be a Navi when there's a great master of Nevuah alive, that's a pagia in the kavod. But since she, Chulda, was related to Yirmiyah, lo hava, and here you have to hear the word Yirmiyah, lo hava Yirmiyah makpid aleha. Yirmiyah would not be makpid. She knew that Yirmiyah would give her the green light to receive Nevuah. And Yirmiyah would understand that she's not trying to usurp or undermine him, his status, but rather that maybe there's certain Nevuah that HaKadosh Baruch wants to bring through her. And Yirmiyah was okay with that idea. And the covenant of a Navi is not like the covenant of a Melech. You know, with regard to Melech, we have a principle called Melech Shemachal Kvodo Ein Kvodo Machal. But with regard to a Navi, like a Rebbe, a Navi is like a Rebbe figure, teacher and a guide, is Machal Kvodo Kvodo Machal. Yeah, Eric, what are you saying about Aaron?
Oh, well, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam were all, they're all
simultaneous. Co-extensive.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, there's an example where, I mean, clearly Moshe was the greatest of the three, but the others...
I guess you'd have to study that carefully, either because they were relatives, they knew Moshe wouldn't be makpid, he was the Adam Mikolodim, or maybe at that time Moshe wasn't yet... I'm lucky if I get through this.
Right. You also have Moshe explicitly saying he wishes everyone was...
We
also have that. Yeah,
right. That's the parasha of what were their names? Eldad who made that, right? That Yeshua was all upset that they were misnabim. Maybe it has to do with this sugya. I don't know, but you're right. Moshe Rabbeinu's response certainly indicates that he's the Adam Mikol Adam. He's not mocked. So again, I just want to emphasize this: there's no halach in nevuah that a person can't prepare himself to be a navi because there are greater nevi'im around. That's not a din of nevuah. The problem is there a din of pegiya bechvodam? You know, you have a Mora HaRav Yisrael, the Navi is the Navi, with a capital N, or capital P, and now you go ahead and you prepare yourself as if to say, well, let me do the job that he's not doing the job. So then it becomes a matter of covenant, a matter of being pogan someone's covenant, and therefore mechila is operative. Now the Gemara wants to know the following. On the one hand, you can justify chulda in her active role in Nevuah because she understood that Yirmiyah would be mochel her as a relative and so forth. But the Gemara is not happy with Yoshio HaMelech. Yoshio is known to be a great tzaddik. He was the one who destroyed Avodah Zorah to some extent. He didn't complete the job, but anyway. And here's this great tzaddik who sends an entire mishlacha to request the counsel of Chulda. What justifies that? In a sense, Yoshio HaMelech is undermining the status of Yirmiyah. In other words, the Gemara is not willing to say that since Yirmiyah would be mochel on his covenant, therefore Yoshio would have the license, the green light, and be permitted to consult with Chulda and, in a sense, step over Yirmiyah. Hechi Shavik Yirmiyah. Umeshader legabo. How could he leave Yirmiya behind, ignore him, and instead ask this question to? In other words, it's one thing that Yirmiya and his relationship with Chulda could be mochel Chulda, give other the permission, but nevertheless, Yirmiya still feels slighted if the king of Israel steps over him, and therefore this is a pagia in the covenant of Yirmiya on the part of Yoshio HaMelech. So the Gemara offers two answers to this question. The first answer, okay, so let me skip to the second answer for a minute. We'll go through it line by line. The second answer is going to be that Yirmiya was not available at this time. He was in Chutz Laaretz. You know, he took a plane to Canada, okay? Okay, we'll see what he was doing in Chutz Laaretz in just a minute. And that's a technical answer, meaning there's no way that Yirmiya could be insulted if there's a pressing, urgent need for counsel, for an answer to a question. Then, you know, you go to whoever's available. And if the Nevuah came to Chulda, let's hope the Chulda has the answer to that question. Yirmiya is not going to be insulted because he's not around. They didn't have, you know, WhatsApps and all that stuff. The first answer is a little bit more complicated. Amri debei Rav Shilo, mipnei sha'anoshim rachmonios hen. Now, what does Noshim Rachmonios have to do with the price of tea in China? So the Marsha says that don't think for one minute that the Gemara thinks that Har Nevuah would be more positive and more optimistic because she's compassionate. That's not so, because as far as the substance of the Nevuah is concerned, the Navi is totally passive. The Navi, with all due respect to his or her compassion, cannot change the content of the Nevuah, says the Marsha. So what is this element here of Rachmanis? Why does it kick in? And the answer, he says, is tefillah. That a Navi could go beyond the parameters, so to speak, the scope of his or her responsibility, and add another element into the equation. That's tefillah. Now, why would a Navi go beyond just simply transmitting the word of God and adding a tefillah? And we see this over and over again by Moshe Rabbeinu. The answer is because the Rachmanis of a Navi, if the Navi has to tell and reveal some bad news about what possibly could be happening in some impending doom, the Navi also sees this as an ace tzara. Now, you and I might say, well, it's not an ace tzara because right now things haven't, you know, the apple cart hasn't been overturned. But insofar as the Navi exists, so to speak, experiences the future now, and that's the power of Nevuah, then it becomes an ace tzara. And if it's an ace tzara, there's a chiyuv tefillah. And it's an unbelievable halacha here that the Gemara is saying that if we have a choice between going to Yirmiya HaNavi for tefillah, and Yirmiya is full of tefillahs, or to Chulda HaNaviyah, better go to a woman than a man, because Nashim Rachmanios say. You know, I just always make this comment on the side. People quote Chazal to try to prove that Chas V'Shalom they had a disparaging view of women, and there's nothing further than the truth. And if you need an example, here's another example. You know, that you know, they say Noshim Atzlonios. So I once heard from Rav Salvechik, this is a Maimar Muzger, that when it's a Yushalmi Gabi Bedikas Chametz, that we don't trust the woman of Bedikas Chametz because Noshim Atzlonios say that women are lazy. Oh, you see what the Jewish rabbis think of the women. So Rav Salvechik said that whenever you see something like that, like Atzlonios saying, or it says that Kohenim are Ragzonim, they get angry. He says you have to understand on a deeper level that Chazal are making a halachic statement. It has nothing to do with being pejorative. For example, a Kohen, if he gets angry at his wife, everybody gets angry at their wife from one point to another, right? Some people get angry on a regular basis to their wife. But if he goes ahead and takes the next step, it's irreversible. He can never, right? Because he can never remarry. In the case of Bedikas Chametz, Rav Salvechik pointed out that the Chazal were misaking a chova on the Baal HaBayis. He's obligated. What Noshim Atzlonios means that if you ask somebody to fill in for you because you're too lazy and you want her to fulfill your obligation, then it's not going to come out the way it should because she doesn't feel that sense of compulsion. I remember the Rav described himself as a youth. That his father, during Bedikas Chometz, he asked him, Yashaber, go up into the attic and check for Chometz, you know, because he was already, I guess it was a little more difficult for a bunch to climb up, you know, and go up to the attic. So the Rav said, he admitted to us, he says, I didn't do such a good job. I felt my father was like shirking his responsibility, you know. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Yirmiya lo hava hasam. Simply, Yirmiya was out of the country. You know, he got to Ben Gurion Airport, they stamped his passport, and he was in Chutzlarts. Where was he? Holach lahachzir es asara, aseres ashvatim. And I'll read to you the rest of this. Is based on a pasuk in Malachim Beis. Shehiglam sancheriv elachla chavor nahar gozen v'arimodai. You know, the ten shvat. And Yirmiyahu was out on a trip. You know, what could I call it? An enterprise, an endeavor to bring back the exiles. You know, try to tell them that, you know, nefesh b'nefesh will take care of them if they come on aliyah and get back into the land. Yirmiyahu realized that the people in Chutzlaritz were intermarrying and so forth, so he thought there was a chance of getting them back to the land of Israel, and that's where he was. So when Melech Yisrael, when Yoshiyahu Melech had to get a quick answer to a question, he turned to Chulda Nevi'a. Now the Gemara goes off on a whole tangent over here. Was Yirmiyahu successful in his endeavor to bring back the Aseres HaShvat? If you'd have woken me up in the middle of the night, I would say absolutely no. He was a total failure. We don't know much about the Aseres HaShvat. But the Gemara says just the opposite, that Yirmiyahu was actually successful. Uminolanda Hadur. Hadur means he brought them back. How do you know that he brought the Aseres HaShvatim back from the Golias to Eretz Yisrael? Now, I don't think the Gemara means that he brought every last Jew, but maybe as a whole, his enterprise was successful. Dichsiv. And this is a Pasuk in Yechezkel. Now, this is really complicated, so I'm going to try to do the best I can. There's a halacha of Yovel. And Yovel, which means that if I sell you a field in Eretz Yisrael, ultimately I get back that field with the Yovel. But that depends upon what's called Kol Yoshvel Olel. Let me try to explain what that means. The halach of Yovel is, it says, V'kidashtem eshnas hachamishim, this is at the end of Sefer Yikra, and it says, U'krosev dror ba'aretz l'chol Yoshvel. So the Sifra on that pasuk in Vayikra Chafei says L'chol Yoshvel is Kol Yoshvel Olel. That means all of Chal Yisrael have to be living in Eretz Yisrael for the Yovel to be Chal. I can't tell you how complicated this is. Reb Chaim Brisk has pages and pages on this topic. In any event, Yechezkel HaNavi is warning the people about doing tshuva. And amongst the various castigations and the warnings about what punishment they will suffer if they, what will be the repercussions if they don't listen to his tochacha, he says that there won't be any yovel, which means that any fields that you've sold and you think securely that you'll get it back at the Jubilee, you're not going to get it back. Why? Because the people are going to go into goals. Now, watch what's going on. Yechezkel is foreseeing, he's prophesizing about something that's in the future. He's not describing something that's present. So if Yirmiyahu is, if Yechezkel HaNavi is saying to them, HaMocher es HaMimkar, Lo Yoshuv, anyone who sold his property, his possessions, his fields in Israel will not get it back. Meaning, as a punishment, Hashem will send them into Golus, and therefore the Yovel will not be Noheg, and any fields that they sold will not return to them. This is all a prediction of the future. Now, the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim began with 2.5 Shvatim, with Reuven Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Now, even though they lived in what we call Transjordan, you know, the eastern, did I get that right? Yeah, the eastern bank of the Jordan. Nevertheless, that's considered part of Eretz Yisrael as far as Yovel is concerned. Now, the very moment that this process, which will culminate with 10 Shvatim, begins with 2.5 Shvatim, it's already not considered Kol Yoshvel Olel. So it means that if you assume that at the time of the Nevuah of Yechezkel and his Tochacha, the 2.5 Shvatim were already in Golus, meaning that the process of Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim had already begun, then he would not be predicting and warning them that the Yovel will not be knowing. The Yovel already would have ceased to be knowing. So if he's talking the future, that HaMocher Esmim Kol Lo Yosha, that God is going to send you into Golus, and as a result, that you'll never get back your fields because the Yovel is completely bought out. So he's talking about the future. Efshar sheyovel batel v'novi misnavi lov sheyi batel. Is it possible that the Shvatim were already in Golus, and despite that fact, Yechezkel is talking about the future, that there will be bitul hayovel? It can't be. It must be that at this point there was no Golus of Shvatim, meaning it was already it was a period of time which is called Kol Yishvel Leah, and as of the present moment, the Yovel is Noah. Ella, how can it be that Yechezkel is prophesizing about the future of Bittul HaYovel when this was already historically after the period of Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim? Ella, the only way we can understand that is Malamed, it must teach us Sheyirmiyah Hechziron. At one point in history, Yirmiyah was able to bring back the Aseres HaShvatim from Golus, and therefore Yovel would be Noheg, because you'd have a fulfillment of the requirement of Kol Yoshvel Leah. And the Gemara goes on to say, during what period of time did this happen? Yoshio ben Amotz Molach Alein. Because again, we're talking about the period of time in which Yishayo sends a mishlacha to Chulda Neviyah. He does not confer with Yirmiyah. And why is it? Because Yirmiyah is already out there in the fields, you know, of Madai and so forth, getting the Jews back into the land. And he succeeded in doing so, in which case Yoshio now becomes the king over all the Jewish people. We have Kol Yoshvel Leha. And then the Yovel is Noheg, so the people are in a very secure position, laid back about the fact that they'll get back their fields. Comes along Yechezkel, he says, wait a minute, you're still guilty of Avodah Zorah, you're still sinning, and therefore you're going to lose your rights to Eretz Yisrael, God's going to send you into exile, and as a result, the Yovel will cease to be Noheg, and you're going to lose your fields. If you can give me just 2 more minutes just to get the whole picture. So Yoshio HaMelech is now the king over Israel. There's a lot of Avodah Zorah going on in Eretz Yisrael. What does Yoshio HaMelech accomplish? He has 2 goals. Number one, he wants to destroy all the mizbechos of Avodah Zorah. And one of the greatest mizbeachs of all was set up by a fellow by the Yeravam ben Nevat. You've all heard of that guy. And that was set up in Beit El. And the second thing that he wanted to do, it's unbelievable, he wanted to dig up the graves of those who were idol worshippers and burn them on that Mizbeach that Yirmiyahu had built for the sake of Avodah Zorah. So you talk about the Jewish attitude towards cremation, this is the one exception to the rule, that Yeshayahu HaNavi, in order to create a takana that to the end, to try to terminate Avodah Zorah, which unfortunately he was not quite successful, he did this terrible thing. Okay, good, Eric. I know you're anxious to say something, so I'll, even though I'm in the middle of something, but...
Sorry, Yechezkel was during Yirmiyah?
Yechezkel and Yirmiyah were contemporaries. If I'm not mistaken, so Yechezkel was a little bit later than Yirmiyah, meaning he lived a little bit later than Yirmiyah.
But Yirmiyah was there during the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash also, so therefore he had to have been... They
right.
definitely overlapped, okay. Because
right.
the same question, I mean, you were talking about the contemporaneous... I mean, here you have two... where they're actually both...
Right, overlap.
Oh, yeah, and they're both principal. They're both making...
Right. So now watch what happens here. The Gemara has a pella. The Gemara doesn't understand what's going on here. How could it be that Yeshayahu HaMelech is the king over all Israel? After all, Israel was split into two. There was Malchus Yehuda, Yeshayahu was from Beis Yehuda, and there was Malchus Yisrael. Now Beit El was located in Malchus Yisrael, and yet Yeshayahu HaNavi, who's the king over Yehuda, is taking the bones of these idol worshippers and he's burning them in Beit El. So look at this pasuk in Malachim Beis. It says, "Vayomer ma'at tziun halaz." He saw a tziun. Tziun is a kever. It's called a tziun kever. And he sees something, asher ani roeh, and it's massive. This massive tziun kever. It's not like one of the great Sephardic rabbis. Who am I thinking of? The Baba Salva. You know, they have a whole big thing over here. They respond to him, "Akever Ishalokim, Asher Ba Yehuda." This was the kever of a great navi who came from Yehuda. "Vayikras Advarim HaEla Asher Asisa Alam Isbeach BeBeisel," And the word got out that Yeshayahu was digging up the bones of all the evildoers and he was burning them. And when Yeshayahu sees this unusually large kever, he asks his whole entourage, the people to his right and to his left, what is the nature of this kever? So they told him, this is the kever of Ish Elokim. And there's a Navi Sheker who is afraid that after he dies, Yeshayahu is going to dig up his kever and burn his bones. So therefore, he commanded his people before he died that he should be buried right near the Ish Elokim. And therefore, this Navi Sheker understood that when Yeshayahu is going to bring out the bones of the sinners and burn them, he would not bring out his bones because he's buried right next door, contiguous to the Ish Elokim. So this is his way of, so to speak, finding protection. So now the Gemara says, "V'chima tivo shel Yoshiyahu al mizbeach beBeisel." How does this pasuk say, "Asher asisal al mizbeach beBeisel"? Beisel was located in Malchi, under Malchi Yisrael, or the dominion of Malchi Yisrael. How does Yeshayahu have the authority to burn the bones on the Mizbeach of Beisel, which it was a great Mizbeach that was built by Yerov ben Nevat for the worship of Avodah Zorah? Ella Melamed, we must assume Sheyashio Molach Aleihem, which means that he was the king over the entire Eretz Yisrael, meaning that the people returned from Golus and he was their king. And Rav Nachman says, I have another proof from a pasuk in Hoshea Navi, Gam Yehuda Shas Katsir Loch Beshuvei Shvus Ami. There's a long discussion here in the footnote, which I'm not going to go into now. If you like, you can learn it on your own, that the word Katsir and the word Katsin, these two words, are very similar in Lashon Kodesh. A Katsin is a leader, and he's a Gadol Besrara, and there's also the word Katsir, which also indicates greatness and leadership power. So now Yehuda Shas Katsir. Now Yehuda itself gets Gedula and Srara. And when is that going to happen? When Yehuda reaches its pinnacle, its apex of Gedula and Srara, when the people of Israel will come back to the land. That's called Kshiyashuvu Shvus Ami. Shvus Ami is a reference to the Asara Shvatim. And the Melch Yehuda here in this context in Hoshea Novi is Yoshiyahu HaMelech. So Yoshiyahu HaMelech is going to rule over the entire of Israel. So Rav Moshe, let's just summarize. We now have the following six Nevi'os that were all proven to be Nevi'os. We had Sarah, and we had Miriam, we had Dvorah, we had Chana, Abigail, Chulda, and now we're up to Esther, the last of the seven. Esther, how do we know that she's a Nevu'ah? Dechsiv, Vayhi, Vayom, HaShlish, Vatilvash, Esther, Malchus. On the third day of the fasting, she wears Malchus. Now that sounds like, and Ein Mikra Yotzev Nipshuto, that she wore Big Day Malchus and she went into Siach HaShverosh to plead on behalf of the Jewish people. The Gemara says there's a word missing here in this pasuk. Big Day Malchus, Miboyle. What does it mean, Vatilbash Esther Malchus? There's nowhere in the Tanakh where you'll see a word like that. Vatilbash or Vayilbash Malchus. It'll always say Vayilbash or Vatilbash Big Day Malchus. Ella, the Tanakh here is hinting at something much more profound. Shelovsha Ruach HaKodesh. The word Malchus is a synonym and a substitute for the word Ruach. Now, where do we see in Tanakh that the word Levush should have anything to do with Ruach? And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim. Okay, how do we see it in Divrei Yom? Ksiv Hocha Vatilbash. Here in Esther it says Vatilbash. Ksiv Hosam there in Divrei Yom it says Veruach Lovsha Es Amosai. So you see that the word Levush can refer to Ruach, and Ruach equals what? Equals Nevuah. So this concept of Ruach as Nevuah is going to explain that the Malchus here is not Big Day Malchus in the physical sense. We're not only limited to Big Day Malchus, but it also means the Malchus of Ruach. Now here's a Kabbalistic comment, which again is way beyond my comprehension. The Maharsha says that there are 10 Sphiros, and the last of the Sphiros is Malchus. And Ruach HaKodesh from up in the heavens goes down, connects to this world through the last and the I guess you'd say the lower, the bottom level rung of the Esses Spheros, which is called Ruach, Ruach HaKodesh. So Ruach HaKodesh comes from Malchus. I meant to say it's called Malchus. Oshi, you wanted to say something before? My goal today is to be able to turn to Daf Tezvah.
I'll ask you later.
All right, great. Omar Rav Nachman. Now, this comment of Rav Nachman I find very fascinating. Two out of the seven Nevi'os have names that are somewhat, I don't know, I don't want to use the word pejorative, but they're not such nice names. For example, a bee, right? A bee, a dvora, is not a kosher insect. And a chulda for sure is not a kosher animal. In fact, a chulda, I don't know if it belongs to the rat family or not, I'm not sure, but it's certainly not.
So for Pesach.
Yeah, the chulda is going to give us a lot of trouble in my next year, you know, at 8:30 about taking chametz from one place to the other. So the answer, I believe, is that Enochinami Yakosh Bochu takes a little bit of a stab, so to speak, like jams these two Nevi'os, that although they were Nevi'os, you know, no one is completely a tzaddik, and they were guilty of a little bit of a sin, shall we say. Or for you and I, it wouldn't have been a sin, but on their level, it was a sin. Omar Rav Nachman, lo yoa yehiruso l'noshi, that when a woman will take too much chashivas for herself, you know, she sticks her nose up in the air, lo yoa, it's not a good idea. And I'll prove it to you, he says. Tarte noshi yehiron havyan. Yehira or yehora is a certain level of gaiva when you take too much for yourself. And there were two women who were very important women, and they took a little bit too much significance for themselves. Visanyon Shmayahu. Sanyon, you know, the Samach in Aramaic replaces a sin in Lashon Kodesh, and there's something disgusting about their names. Chada, one of these two women, Shma Ziburta. Ziburta is Aramaic for Dvora. A bee in Aramaic is called a Ziburta. In fact, when we divide up possessions into three levels, the lowest level is called Ziburis. It's like a little bit pejorative. Vechadan, I'll give you another woman who took too much upon herself. And Shma Karkushta. Karkushta is an Aramaic word for Chulda. So Dvora and Chulda were given these names for animals or creatures that are shpelim shebebrios, they're on the bottom on the totem pole. And why? Because there's a little bit of gaiva here. Now, the Ben Ish Chai is bothered here. What does the Gemara mean when it says lo yon yihirusa l'noshi? Is it a woman's thing? I mean, a man also should not be a bal gaiva. Is it not for a man to be a bal gaiva? So he bases himself on a Gemara in Brachos that says that Yishayo Anavi refuses to go to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and he wants Chizkiyahu HaMelech to come to him. And the Medrash says that Pinchas didn't want to go to Yiftach, but rather he had Yiftach come to him. And the reason for that, he says, is because Asur l'Neviim Limchol al Kvod Hashchina. So again, if it's my own personal kavod, the Navi has his kavod, like for example, the Shechina want, you know, somebody else wants to prepare to receive Nevuah, like we spoke about before with regard to Chul, that's okay, I could be mochel on the kavod. But when it comes to kavod Ashechina, because Malchus is not the same as Shechina, Nevuah Shechina is there, he's not allowed to be mochel. However, that's only because the Nevi'im, the male Nevi'im, play a special role in terms of facing up to the leaders of Israel and, how should I say, arguing with them. You remember that Yishayo HaNovi is going to come to Chizkiyo and he's going to give him a real piece of his mind. So he's representing the Shechina. That's usually a male kind of role. Again, I can't tell you all the details as to why. But this halacha that a Novi should not be mochel on his kavod, which justifies the fact that Yishayo tells Chizkiyo to come to him, and a similar story in the case of Pinchas and so forth, that's for the males. But as far as the females is concerned, they can be mochel on their kavod.
But she was, I mean, Dvorah was, it was her, she was filling the same role at that time.
Her relation with Baruch.
She was in charge. I mean, she was the one who was, she had to reprimand him and Israel as well. I mean, she served that same role.
So I don't know. I didn't look up the parash. I'll just read to you the Gemara. Ksiv ba, it says with regard to Dvar, Vatishlach Vatikra LeBarak. So you're telling me that she wanted to give castigation to Moshe?
I'm just saying she was the shofet. I mean, she was the...
Right. But in terms of her relationship with her husband, she still has... she could be the greatest leader in Israel. You know, she's Golda Meir, whoever she is. But still, she has to respect her husband.
Baruch wasn't her husband. He was the general, wasn't he?
No, Baruch was her husband. Yeah, he was also the general, but he's also her husband. But she refused to go to him. And that's a little bit of taking too much gaiva upon herself. All right, there's another whole piece here, but we don't have time for that. Oh, and Karkushto, what about Chulda Nevi'a? Ksivba, it says with regard to her, it says, Imru le'ish asher sholach eschem elai. Imagine, she's talking about Melech Yoshiyahu, the king of all of Israel, and she calls him an ish. She doesn't have the respect to call him a melech. She should have said, Imru le'melech asher sholach eschem elai. This is the message I want to send to the king. Lo Amra Imru le'melech. Now again, these names were given to these two women, I assume, again, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, at their birth. But somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu already foresaw down the line this midah and allowed these names. So I was wondering, Dvorah in our family is a very common name. There's no Chulda, although my wife's grandmother's name is Ratza, which is a Polish name or a Yiddish name, which is very similar to a weasel. So I don't know. I'm thinking to myself that at least with regard to Dvorah, nobody seems to blink about this.
No.
Nobody hesitates about giving the name Dvorah.
I mean, you could argue that this is a fairly minor criticism.
Right.
It's not, I mean, she did...
But the name itself, even though it's a minor criticism, it's called... The Gemara's language is a little bit... Sanyon Shmayahu. Do you see those two words? Sanyo Shmayo. I don't know how he translated it. I have it as Shmosein Meusim. I didn't even want to tell you what I have here.
Repulsive.
I didn't even want to say it before. I couldn't get the word out of my mouth. But that's what he says here. Meusim. I mean, to take a shame that's Meus, according to the Gemara's description, and give it to your own daughter. I don't know. I'm just telling you. Rabosa, you'll get my style. I share with you my inner feelings.
That's what I do. But one thing on Chulda, though, it says Imrula Ish. I mean, Ish has been a term of respect in the...
But not compared to a male. Not compared to a male.
It says man. It's La Ish. It's there's only one man that you can refer to.
But not when you talk to a male. There's only one word you can use for a male. You remember that Naval was Chayv Misa going to Dov because he called David Ben Yishai instead of calling him the male. Again, she tried to mitigate, Avigail.
Yeah.
Omar Av Nachman, Chulda Mibnei Bonov Shel Yehoshua. She was a descendant of Yeshua bin Nun, Haisa. And how do I know this? It's like a Gzeres Shava kind of thing. Sivhach, with regard to Chulda Navi, it says, Eshes Shalom ben Tikva ben Charchas. Uksiv Hasam in Shoftim, it says, with regard to the burial of Yeshua, it says, Betimnas Cherem, Cheres. So I know Charchas and Cheres are similar. It must be, says Rav Nachman, that she was a descendant of Yoshua. Now the Gemara is going to go into a whole tirade. Is it really true that Chulda was a descendant of Yoshua ben Nun? Because we think that Chulda was a descendant of Rachav Hazona. Now Rachav Hazona, ostensibly, she was a Gioris.
So she descended.
That she was married to Yoshua because the punchline in the Gemara. But the Gemara doesn't know that she was married to Yoshua. So the Gemara says the following. If Chulda is listed as a descendant of Rachav, who's a Gioris, then obviously she's not related to Yoshua ben Nun. And then the Gemara is going to say that after Hageris, Yoshua married her, so she was both a descendant of Rachav and a descendant of Yoshua.
They're citing Ben Charchas, but in the verse, this cites the whole verse where it says, Eshet Shalom ben Tikva ben Charchas. So she was the wife of the son of the descendant of Yoshua.
Eric, do me a favor. Let's hold the question till tomorrow. I realize that I'm a little bit late.
Okay.
And I'm trying to do tshuva because yesterday I came to my shiur about 10 minutes late. So.